शरण गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिदेव। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि लोक भक्त वृंद। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। हरे कृष्ण। सो श्रील प्रभुपाद हैज इन द इंट्रोडक्शन begun to describe the five subject matters that have been discussed in the Bhagavad Gita. So which are those five subject matters? First, Ishwar or the Supreme Lord. Second, the Jiva, the individual living entity. Third, Prakriti or the material nature. Fourth, Kal or time, and the fifth, karma or activity. So these are the five topics which are discussed in the Bhagavad Gita. And in the introduction, Srila Prabhupada gives some kind of summary of what is talked about these five topics in the rest of the text. And we have seen yesterday that Srila Prabhupada has begun talking about Jiva and Ishwar. So we are on page 8 of the introduction, and we saw how the Lord is always the Lord. He is always the Supreme Controller. There is never any moment when the Lord is not in control, and the Jiva is always controlled. There is never a moment when the Jiva is in control. All the Jiva can do is to desire, but for the fulfillment of his desire, he is completely dependent on the Supreme Lord, who may act directly if the Jiva is a devotee, or the Lord may act through the medium of the material energy if the Jiva is not a devotee. Either way, the Jiva is controlled by the external energy or by the internal energy of the Lord. So having briefly mentioned Jiva and Ishvara, then Srila Prabhupada continues, and this time we will talk about Prakriti. So let us look at the second paragraph, the middle portion on page 8. Prakriti, material nature, and time, the duration of existence of the whole universe or the manifestation of material nature, and karma, activity, are also discussed. The cosmic manifestation is full of different activities. All living entities are engaged in different activities. From Bhagavad Gita we understand, we must learn what God is, what the living entities are, what Prakriti is, what the cosmic manifestation is, how it is controlled by time, and what the activities of the living entities are. So the terms have been described here. So what is Prakriti? It's the material nature. What is Kal or time? This is actually a very, very philosophical and important question. What is time? Even today, philosophers and scientists are struggling with this idea of what is time. So that is also going to be discussed. And very briefly, Srila Prabhupada mentions the duration of existence of the whole universe is time. That's correct, because what happens after that? When the universe is destroyed, what happens? Does time remain as we understand it?
Something about the sound.
So does time exist as we know it? No. The entire material energy rests with the Lord. The living entities also rest with the Lord. So where is the question of time as we understand it? So time as we know it exists in the duration of the material manifestation, in the duration of the creation of the material world. Because time acts here in this material world to transform things, to change things. That's the function of time. Time is the agent of change. Because of the influence of time, everything keeps changing. And therefore you have the six stages of transformation: the birth, growth, maturity, decay, and eventually death or destruction. And then the activities of the living entities is called karma. So all these five have to be understood. In this material world, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. So then Srila Prabhupada goes on to say that these are the five things that we must learn from the Bhagavad Gita. Next chapter, next paragraph. Out of these five basic subject matters in Bhagavad Gita, it is established that the Supreme Controller, or Krishna, or Brahman, or the Supreme Controller, or Paramatma, you may use whatever name you like, is the greatest of all. The living beings are in quality like the Supreme Controller. For instance, the Lord has control over the universal affairs of material nature, as will be explained in the later chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. Material nature is not independent. She is acting under the directions of the Supreme Lord. As Lord Krishna says, Maya dhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam. This material nature is working under my direction. When we see wonderful things happening in the cosmic nature, we should know that behind this cosmic manifestation, there is a controller. Nothing could be manifested without being controlled. It is childish not to consider the controller. For instance, a child may think that an automobile is quite wonderful to be able to run without a horse or another animal pulling it. But a sane man knows the nature of the automobile's engineering arrangement. He always knows that behind the machinery there is a man, a driver. Similarly, the Supreme Lord is the driver under whose direction everything is working. Unquote. So Srila Prabhupada now begins talking about Ishvara, the Supreme Controller, and says that by whatever name you may call him, that's all right. But the fact is that there is only one Supreme Controller. And from Bhagavad Gita we understand that that Supreme Controller himself is speaking now, and his name is Krishna. But according to different mentalities, according to different cultures, he is addressed and called differently. But whatever it may be, ultimately he is the Supreme Controller. The jivas are not actually controllers, although they are part and parcel of the Supreme Controller, and they have the same qualities as the Supreme Controller has, but they are in minute quantity. And therefore the jiva cannot actually be the controller, even if he has the desire to be the controller. And then Srila Prabhupada discusses the controllership of the Lord over Prakriti or the material nature. And he says it is childish to think that there is no controller behind this material nature. And that's a fact. Behind any organized arrangement, behind anything that is systematically arranged, there must be a brain. Not only a brain who has created that arrangement, but a brain that maintains the arrangement and doesn't allow it to deteriorate, to degenerate, to break down. Because the nature of everything in this world is that everything tends to degenerate. If you keep a machine as it is for a long time, what will happen? If you keep your automobile or your car, motor car, for 5 years as it is, then it will be difficult to start the car again after 5 years until you get it serviced. So by nature, everything tends to decay in this world. Even our houses, our bodies, our clothes, everything tends to degenerate. So if something is keeping things going here, if the sun is setting every time in accordance with the law, it is rising in accordance with the law, everything is going on very precisely. So precisely that you can predict how things will happen thousands of years into the future. Is it not logical to imagine or understand that there will be and must be a controller? Yesterday we were talking about the theory of chance. And we mentioned that there is actually nothing called chance. The word chance is used by people when they don't know the cause of something. So chance is simply a term that expresses our ignorance, that's all. Our ignorance of the cause of something. So when scientists say that the cause of the universe is chance, it just means that they don't know. How can we logically, scientifically say that something which is precisely organized doesn't have a controller? Doesn't have a brain behind it. Of course, you may have all heard of this story about Isaac Newton. How many of you have heard about Isaac Newton? Please raise your hand. Man, he was a famous scientist. And to him is attributed the discovery of the law of gravitation, that everything falls. Of course, that's a whole big science. Actually, many people say Newton discovered, but we must understand, he discovered what was already existing. He didn't create the law. Newton did not create gravitation. He just understood that there is something called gravitation and he put it into some mathematical form, that's all. So even though Newton was a scientist, he was also a theist. He was a believer in God. He understood that there is some supreme force who is controlling everything. So in his laboratory, he had made an arrangement of all the planets and the sun in the solar system. And the planets were moving around the sun. And he had some shafts and axles, crankshaft, by which the motion of the planets was being organized. So this way, when he moved the crankshaft, then all the planets would start moving in their orbits, and he had calculated the proportions. So he had created some kind of a model of the solar system, the sun and the planets. And then one time this friend came to see him. And the friend was an atheist. And Newton knew that. And for a long time, Newton had been wanting to somehow convey to him and make him understand that behind this universe, there has to be a controller. Not only a designer, but also a controller to see that the design is maintained. So when this friend came to the laboratory, he asked him, "Oh, that's a wonderful model you have prepared here, Newton." So Newton said, "I didn't prepare it. So really, then who prepared it? He said, actually, I just put some metals and rods and things here at night. And when I came back in the morning, lo and behold, by chance, everything had just come up. It all just got together in all these pieces and the little shaft, all the nuts and bolts, everything got together. And all came in perfect distances, perfect proportions. Everything was just happened like that by chance. So then the friend started laughing. He said, Newton, stop joking with me. Tell me, really, who did it? So Newton said, I'm serious. It just happened by chance. And naturally, the friend refused to believe it. So Newton then told him, my friend, you refuse to believe that a few pieces of metal in this small room, which have been arranged in a particular fashion, could not have come by chance. You don't accept that. And this is only a model of something that is billions and billions of times bigger and more complex. And you think that that could have happened by chance? Without a controller? Without a designer? How foolish. So the friend had no reply to give. So this is a fact, that without a controller, without a designer, nothing can be created, nothing can exist, nothing can be maintained. Indeed, nothing can be destroyed even. Even to destroy something, you need a destroyer. Even a chapati is not created without somebody. Nothing. If you go on the street and just see a wristwatch lying on the street, can we say it happened by chance, the wristwatch? So therefore, the point here is, Prabhupada is making the point that it's childish. It's childish to imagine that there is no controller in the creation. It is so illogical. But such is the nature of the Lord's Maya, of the Lord's illusory energy, that even big scientists, very intelligent with Nobel Prizes and whatnot, they also believe everything happened without a controller. So who is intelligent? A simple illiterate man who has implicit faith in the words of Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, that Krishna is a Supreme Lord and He has created everything? Or on the other hand, you have a big PhD who has got a Nobel Prize who doesn't believe that there is a control in the creation. Who is more intelligent? What do you think? The so-called illiterate man is more intelligent because he understands the truth as it is. Do you know how Prabhupada defines science? How many of you have read the book Life Comes From Life? Yes. These smaller books of Srila Prabhupada are very powerful. All the books are powerful, of course, but even the smaller books are very useful for preaching and also very useful for us to get a clearer understanding of this philosophy. How does Prabhupada define science? Prabhupada said, science means, very simple, just see, science means to know things as they are. Such a beautiful definition. Science means to know things as they are. So if you think that the universe is created without a creator, you don't know the most fundamental thing about this universe. Who is the person who has created it? Prabhupada had a discussion with a scientist, when the scientist was arguing with him that what's wrong in studying the creation? Prabhupada said the grass will grow despite you wanting to study the grass. So Prabhupada said, we have no quarrel with you studying the creation. But our problem is that you want to give more importance to the creation than the creator. That is our difficulty. Who is more important, the creator or the creation? We see now that there is a particular painting in some art exhibition. It's selling for millions of dollars. Although at least for myself, with no knowledge of art and no understanding and intelligence to understand art, for me it's all the same. Just a few splashes of colors, a few strokes of the brush here and there, and sell for millions of dollars. For me at least, one cannot understand how it will sell for such a big amount. But why does it sell for such a high amount? Because of a particular painter. The painter is very well known, is very famous. If you and I paint something like that and put it up, nobody will pay millions of dollars for it. Because that painting is associated with a particular person who is very famous, therefore people are willing to pay millions of dollars for it. Otherwise the painting has no value. There are so many paintings like this everywhere. So the creator is more important than the creation, because without the creator there would not be a creation. And the goal of the creation itself is to facilitate our understanding of the creator. The seen is the proof of the unseen. That's what the Bible also says, I believe. That you can understand something that is not visible by analyzing what is visible. 2 days ago we discussed this verse from the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says, Mattaha parataram nanyat kechidasti nananjaya mahi sarvam idam protam sutre mani ganativa, where he says that I am the supreme truth, there is no truth superior to me, and everything rests in me or upon me as pearls are strung on a thread. We don't see the thread, we only see the pearl necklace. But nonetheless, we understand by looking at the way the pearls are arranged that there is a thread that goes between the pearls. Otherwise, the pearls would have scattered. The pearls would not be strung together like that in one line. So similarly, when we see the organized nature of this material manifestation, the way all the planets and stars and everything is organized, the way the seasons are coming and going, the way life itself grows and develops in this world, we must understand that there is a creator, even though we cannot see the creator with our eyes. One has to learn to infer logically by looking at the creation that there is a creator. And therefore, in various chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives us ways and means to understand and perceive his presence by just looking at the world around us. For example, he says, Rasoham apsukonteya shashasuryayo prabhasmi shashasuryayo. I am the taste of the water. I am the light of the sun and the moon. So when we taste water, we remember Krishna, because the taste is Krishna, Krishna's energy. The light of the sun and moon is Krishna's own light coming from the effulgence of his divine body. So in this way, by looking at the creation around us, we automatically, logically understand that there is God, there is a supreme controller who exists. He creates the universe, he maintains it and destroys it. In this way we can understand this creation. Even Brahmaji, of course, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the Brahma Samhita, has said, Srishti Sthiti Pralaya Sadhana Shakti Reka Chayeva Yasya Bhuvanani Vibharti Durga Ichhan Rupam Api Yasya Chachesta Tesa Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. He says that the work of creation, maintenance, destruction is performed under the superintendence of the Supreme Lord Shri Krishna, and Maya Devi here, who actually manages this material creation, is nothing but the chaya or the shadow of the spiritual energy of the Lord from the spiritual world. And this Maya, this material energy, actually acts according to the desires of the Lord. Ichha anurupam api yasya cha cheshtate sa. Cheshtate means the workings. So the workings of the material energy are always in accordance with the will or the desire of the Supreme Lord, who is the creator. So Prakriti is always under the control of the Lord, just as the jivas are always under the control of the Lord. In the Srimad Bhagavatam also, we hear we read Sutta Goswami explaining to the sages at Naimisharanya that when Vyasadeva was trying to contemplate, as per Narad Muni's instructions, how to compose the Srimad Bhagavatam, that he sat in deep meditation. Bhakti yoga na manasi samyak pranahite male apashyat purusham purnam mayam cha tat apashrayam. Bhakti yogena, by the process of devotional service, manasi samyak pranahite, he fixed his mind, he engaged his mind perfectly, samyak, by the process of devotional service. And therefore his mind was amalam, amale, it was very pure, without any material contamination. And then what did he see? Apashyat, he saw purusham purnam. He saw directly in front of him, from his internal eyes, Krishna was standing there, purusham purnam, the purna purusha, Supreme Personality of Godhead. But the Supreme Personality was not alone. Maya cha tat apashrayam. He was accompanied by Maya, Maya Devi, the material energy personified. And she was standing at a distance from the Lord with folded hands, offering her respects to Krishna. In the Srimad Bhagavatam there is this painting. How many of you have seen this painting of Vyasadeva sitting in meditation, and then Krishna is there and Maya is at a distance and she is offering respects like this with folded hands. So Maya Chatat Apashraya means that Maya is always under the control of Krishna. It's never that somehow the material energy sometimes slips out of Krishna's hands. No, never happens. So in this way we understand that both Prakriti and Jiva are under the control always of the Supreme Ishvara, Lord Krishna. So let us now move on again to read Prabhupada's introduction. Page 9, in the first paragraph, we'll start from the third line. Quote, now the Jivas or the living entities have been accepted by the Lord, as we will note in the later chapters, as his parts and parcels. A particle of gold is also gold. A drop of water from the ocean is also salty. And similarly, we the living entities, being part and parcel of the Supreme Controller, Ishvara or Bhagavan, Lord Sri Krishna, have all the qualities of the Supreme Lord in minute quantity. Because we are minute Ishvaras, subordinate Ishvaras, we are trying to control nature as presently we are trying to control space on planets. And this tendency to control is there because it is in Krishna. But although we have a tendency to lord it over material nature, we should know that we are not the Supreme Controller. This is explained in the Bhagavad Gita, unquote. So the nature of the Jiva is being further described by Srila Prabhupada. The word Ishvara means controller. So the Jiva is also trying to be Ishvara, trying to lord it over this material nature. And Prabhupada explains very nicely that because a Jiva is a part and parcel of Krishna, and Krishna is a Supreme Controller, and he has the quality of controllership, so the Jiva also has that desire within him. So then the question that we asked, if Krishna is a Supreme Controller, the Jiva is a part and parcel of Krishna, and has all the qualities of Krishna in minute quantity, so very naturally also we have the quality of controllership, then what's wrong? What's wrong if we try to control? How would you answer? Who would like to answer this question? The quality of wanting to control is there in us because it's there in Krishna. It's not my fault or your fault. We have this tendency because it's there in Krishna, who is our origin. So if the quality is there, then why not do it? Why not control? Yes. Because we are still under the control of Maya, all right? Anything else? Yes. Because our situation is perfect when we are in the service of Krishna. Yes, it's right. Something a little more succinct. Yes, because we cannot control the way we like. Yes, let's put it this way. Although being part and parcel of Krishna, we have the desire in us to control, still we should not try to control because, very simply put, it is not our position. We are not controllers by nature. Our constitutional position is not to be controller. Our constitutional position is to be controlled. And therefore, even though the desire is there in us, our efforts to try to control will always be futile, in vain. We will never be successful because it is not possible to be the controller. Even though the desire to control may be there, but because it is not our constitutional position to be the controller, therefore we should not try to control. Because in any case, we will be unsuccessful, however hard we may try. That is the reality of the situation. We may be tiny Ishwara, as Prabhupada says here, minute Ishwaras, but the supreme Ishwara is Krishna. Ishwara Paramaha Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha. So Ishwaras are many, but the real Ishwara, the supreme Ishwara, is Krishna. Therefore, we should not try to be the controller. We should try to be a servant of the Supreme Controller, or the servant of the servants of the Supreme Controller. That is our perfectional stage, our constitutional position. And then Prabhupada also gives the example here of how a particle of gold is also gold, and a drop of water from the ocean is also similar in quality. The drop of water from the ocean is salty. The ocean water, the ocean itself is salty. So you can understand the quality of the ocean by looking at the drop of water. When we go to a pathologist to get our blood tested, the doctor tells us, get a blood test done for such and such thing. So we go for a blood test. What does the laboratory technician do? Does he empty out 5 liters of blood to test our blood? He takes only a few drops, and those few drops are enough. From an analysis of those few drops, he understands what kinds of germs or whatever are there in the body. So an indication, an examination of a few drops is sufficient to give an idea of the entire blood supply in the body. Similarly, the jiva is part and parcel of Krishna, one in quality with Krishna. So whatever qualities we find in ourselves now in minute quantity, in pure state, are to be found in Krishna in infinite quantity. So we are one with Krishna in quality, but we are not one with Krishna in quantity. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has called this, what does he call this? Achintya Bheda Abheda Tattva. Tattva means truth. Achintya means inconceivable and simultaneous. Bheda means difference. Abheda means oneness. So the jiva is simultaneously one and different from the Supreme Lord Krishna. one in quality, different in quantity. You can float many huge ships in the ocean, but you can't float anything in a drop of water. So therefore, even though the drop of water is salty, you still can't compare it to the ocean. In the same way, even though in tattva, in substance, the jiva is the same as Krishna, but still therefore you can't compare the jiva to Krishna, because Krishna is like the unlimited ocean. So next, now having talked about the relationship between the Ishvara, Supreme Ishvara, and the minute Ishvaras, then Prabhupada will now talk about the material nature, Prakriti. So let's read the second paragraph on page 9. Quote, what is material nature? This is also explained in Gita as inferior energy, Prakriti, inferior nature. The living entity is explained as the superior Prakriti. Prakriti is always under control, whether inferior or superior. Prakriti is female, and she is controlled by the Lord, just as the activities of a wife are controlled by the husband. Prakriti is always subordinate, predominated by the Lord, who is the predominator. The living entities and material nature are both predominated, controlled by the Supreme Lord. According to the Gita, the living entities, although parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord, are to be considered Prakriti. This is clearly mentioned in the 7th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Apareyam itasvanyam prakritim vitti me param jiva bhutam. This material nature is my inferior Prakriti. But beyond this is another Prakriti, jiva bhutam, the living entity. Unquote. So the point Prabhupada is making here is that there are two kinds of Prakriti. Prakriti means nature or energy. One is the inferior energy, the other is the superior energy. The inferior energy is called apara prakriti. The superior energy is called para prakriti. The word para means superior, just like param brahma. Param, param means supreme. So para means superior. So we have both the kinds of prakritis. Prakriti means nature. Behind nature there is always a person. Like for example, even in everyday language we discuss, oh, he has a very fiery nature. Nature. So whose nature is it? So we talk of Prakriti. So Prakriti is nature. So whose nature? It is Krishna's nature, the Supreme Lord's nature. The material energy is called apara because apara means not superior, that means inferior. So in the 7th chapter, having described the 8 elements of Prakriti, material nature, like the earth, water, fire, air and so on, then he also goes on to describe apareyam, apara iyam, tu anyam Prakriti. Apart from this apara shakti, this inferior shakti that I have spoken about, O Arjuna, there is something superior. Jiva bhuta mahabhavo dhavate idam jagat. These living entities, the supreme prakriti, the superior prakriti, they are trying to exploit this material nature. The superior prakriti is trying to exploit the inferior prakriti. The jivas are trying to exploit material nature, but they are never successful in their endeavor, because that is not the position of the jiva, of the superior prakriti, to exploit like this. However, both the superior and inferior prakriti in this world are firmly under the control of Krishna. And that is the point that Prabhupada is making here. Prakriti is female. Even grammatically, the word prakriti is as opposed to the word purusha, that is male. Technically, the word purusha means enjoyer or the controller. So it is only the Lord who is the purusha or the enjoyer or the controller. Everything else in this creation is to be enjoyed by Krishna, is to be controlled by Krishna. Whether it's the material energy or it is the jivas, the living entities. Of course, Krishna is aloof from his material creation. When Krishna enjoys, he doesn't enjoy the material energy. He always enjoys the spiritual energy, which is ever existing for his pleasure. Prakriti cannot act without the empowerment of the Purusha. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami describes that Prakriti is like an iron rod. The iron rod cannot burn anyone unless the iron rod has come in contact with fire. When the iron rod comes in contact with fire, then it also acquires the qualities of fire, and then when you touch the iron rod, it is very hot and your fingers will burn. So the iron rod has acquired the quality of burning because of being empowered or energized by fire. So fire is like Krishna and the iron rod is like Prakriti. On its own, Prakriti can do nothing. But when it comes in contact with Krishna, when Krishna energizes the Prakriti, so to speak, then the Prakriti becomes alive in the sense that Prakriti begins to act and move and so on. This is a very important analogy, a very, very simple analogy but easy to understand. People think that the nature itself, the universe itself, is the source of everything. Let's go back a little bit to what we talked about yesterday, about how some scientists say that this universe was created with a big bang. Everything just happened. Boom. And there was a fine universe that came about, and all of us are sitting here as a result of one big bang. And then everything else is manifesting according to the science automatically. So when the question is asked of them as to what existed before the Big Bang, they have no answers. What caused the Big Bang? They have no answer. So when it is told to them that whether there was a Big Bang or not, the question is that somebody put that material there so that there could be a Big Bang, even if there was a Big Bang. Actually, it wasn't a Big Bang. It was a very nice explosion. Very beautifully controlled, like music, like a symphony. We understand that the universes are coming out from Mahavishnu's body. And as Mahavishnu lies down in the causal ocean, as he breathes out, all the universes are coming out from the pores of his skin, moving out very nicely, gently. And as they move out from Mahavishnu's body, the universes, which are like eggs, they become bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and they move outwards. Very nicely controlled, systematically, harmoniously moving out like that. Not that everything just exploded, boom. An explosion is never controlled. So here is an outward movement. An outward movement of all the universes that took place from Mahavishnu. That we can accept. Because that is there in the Shastra. So then they say that if you say that God created the universe, our question is, who created God? That's how the scientists sometimes reply. when we say that that God created the universe, then they say, well, then our question is, who created God? What would you reply? Yes.
He is always there.
He is always there. Okay? That's correct. By definition, God is He who always exists. God is He who is the creator of everything. Anadir Adir Govindam, Sarva Karana Karanam. He has no origin, Anadi. But He is Adi, He is the origin of everything, Sarva Karana Karanam. He is the cause of all causes. So by definition, there is nothing before God. That's how we define God. God is, always exists. So then the scientist has a counter reply to that. He says, well, if you say God always exists, then I say the universe always exists. There is no need for God. The universe always exists and the universe is the cause of everything. So how would you reply to that? Now they are trying to dispense with the idea of God. They say there is no need to bring in the concept of God, because if you say God is always existing, we say, well, the universe is always existing. The universe is sufficient to take care of itself. Yes. So one answer, yes, is that material energy, the forms of material energy, not the material energy itself, but the various manifestations of the material energy have a tendency to degenerate, as we have discussed before. So there is always something beyond the material energy which is holding it up. And when the decay is complete, then it regenerates everything and starts everything afresh. Kaviraj Goswami explains that material nature is not the ultimate cause. The scientists may say the universe is, but the universe cannot be a cause of everything. It is only the immediate cause. It is not the ultimate cause. The ultimate cause is there is an intelligence behind the matter. Matter is inert. Matter has no consciousness. So matter cannot act on its own. You always need a conscious force to move or manipulate something that is unconscious, something that is inert. And in this context, Kaviraj Goswami gives the example of a pot and the potter and the potter's wheel. Is the potter's wheel a cause of the pot? Yes or no? But it is. You can't say no. The potter's wheel, you cannot deny that the potter's wheel is a cause of the pot. The pot is coming from the potter's wheel. But what? It's not the ultimate cause. It is not even the real cause. The real cause is the potter. There is a potter sitting who is manipulating the potter's wheel. And therefore it appears that the pot is coming from the wheel. But actually, the wheel cannot function without the potter behind it, to control it, to manipulate it. In the same way, all these different manifestations here may appear to have come just by the workings of the laws of nature. But who is there behind? Who is there behind to control this material nature? So Krishna is like a potter. This material nature is like the potter's wheel. And the various manifestations here are like the pot. So material nature cannot independently produce anything. Elsewhere also Prabhupada gives another example. Sometimes you may have a stack of rice grains in a godown or in a field.
and you may see a scorpion coming out from inside that stack of rice. And one may argue the scorpion, the rice is the cause of the birth of the scorpion. The scorpion has come from the rice. So is it true? Has the scorpion come from the rice? In one sense he's right, yes. The scorpion is coming from the rice, but it's only physically. But there was an egg there. The egg was placed in that stack of rice by some other scorpion. And that egg is now grown. And the scorpion is born. And then the scorpion comes out of that stack of rice. Similarly, all things in this material creation happen because the material nature is being energized to act by the Supreme Potter, Sri Krishna. All the creations in this world are taking place because of this. And actually Prabhupada here mentions also that Prakriti is feminine and the Lord is masculine, and the whole process of creation goes like this. That the material nature, Prakriti, is impregnated by the glance of the Lord. All the jivas through the glance of the Lord are impregnated into material nature. And then material nature becomes agitated into activity. And at every stage in the process of creation, the Lord's glance is always there. At every stage. Inasmuch as when one is cooking a meal and one periodically adds ingredients, one is also stirring constantly. If you don't stir, then it will not come out right. So although the ingredients are coming together in the material nature to form this material universe, but Krishna's glance is like that stirring that is making sure that everything is going just right. And ensuring Krishna is the cook. Prakriti is like all the ingredients put in the vessel. And ultimately whatever comes out, the delicious food that comes out, is like the manifestations here, all the different forms that we see. So to say that there is a nice, delicious, you know, meal laid out in front of us without a cook is absurd. So also to say that all these beautiful forms are here, these trees and plants and animals, human beings, birds, all existing without a creator, is foolishness. So therefore the Prakriti, both material and spiritual, are under the control of the Supreme Ishvara, and both are meant to serve Him. So there must be cooperation between the Jiva and Prakriti to serve Krishna. Prakriti, the material nature, is willing to serve Krishna, no problem. The problem is with the Jiva. So the Jiva purifies his desire so that he cooperates with the Prakriti to serve Krishna, then this will no longer remain material. Everything will become spiritual. But till such time as that vision is there, this material nature remains material. And what is this material nature composed of when seen in this way? That Srila Prabhupada will describe in the next paragraph, which we'll discuss tomorrow. So are there any questions or comments? Yes. What is the goal? A role. What is the role of controllership? In a jiva. Because it exists. Who would like to answer this question? What is the role of controllership in a jiva? Because it exists. It exists there. Does it have a role? Yes. Jiva can submit the controllership to the Lord. Yes, that's important. Yes, Mother.
Something that really needs to be dealt with. Something that we
Yes, the controller, the tendency for being controller is, or rather the idea that we are controllers is a product of the illusory energy. The fact of the matter is that even though the desire may be there in us, we are not actually controllers. It is an illusion. And we have to use that spirit of controllership, whatever extent it exists, in the service of the Lord. Yes. Somebody raised their hand here? Yeah. Yes. Krishna is more pleased when we give up that sense of controllership for His pleasure. Just like Krishna is supremely independent. So we also have some independence, but that is minute independence. But the perfection of that minute independence is to use that independence to give up that independence. You have the choice to try to be independent according to your desire, or to give up that independence and act according to higher authority. So the perfection of the independence is to give it up for the pleasure of Krishna. Independence means controllership. You want to be controller. Similarly, the perfection of the sense of controllership is to give it up to serve Krishna, or to use it the way Krishna wants, to submit it for Krishna's use to whatever extent and in whatever way Krishna wants. Because constitutionally we are meant to serve and be controlled rather than actually controlled. Okay? Yes? Does it mean we give up all qualities? No. Actually, the qualities that we find here are a perverted form of the real original qualities that exist in the spiritual world. What we see here as anger actually exists as compassion in the spiritual world. What we see here as lust exists actually as love in the spiritual world. What we see here as arrogance and pride exists in the spiritual world as humility. What we see here as ignorance exists in the spiritual world as knowledge. So in this way, everything that we see here has to be purified to bring it back to its original position. So it is not that these qualities are all to be negated, but they can also be used in Krishna's service in their pure form. So that is the principle, that everything, whether it's material or spiritual, has to be used in Krishna's service. Because both are Prakriti, and Prakriti is meant for that purpose alone, to serve the Supreme Purusha, the Lord. Okay? So thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Gaur Premanande. Thank you.